Andy's talked about the Bible revealing God's plan to humanity, and that plan, the essence of that plan, being to introduce us to Jesus. So when we were thinking about this evening, we thought we would interview somebody whose life has been impacted by the Bible, who has met Jesus. And we thought of lots of people in church that we could get out the front here and interview. But Kath came to mind, I think, fairly early on in our conversation. When I put it to her, she was, I think, in one sense, feeling very strongly that's what she should be doing. She said yes. I think it was a large part of her that didn't want to do it. But I'm really glad she has, because I think it illustrates very clearly when you hear from her that the Bible has impacted every bit of her life all the way through. But I won't try and preempt that. Kath, we've rehearsed this to some extent, and there are three questions that I'm going to put to you, so hopefully they're the ones that you're expecting. When we talked about it before, you said very clearly that you became a Christian directly through the Bible. Could you just explain how that old book that Andy's talked about spoke to you directly?
It wasn't a one-off thing. I was brought up to, from early years, I went to church and I went to Sunday school, and I was taught to kneel down by my bed at night and say my prayers. And I did that. And that was just a habit. And as I went through my primary school years, you know, mental arithmetic tests, spelling tests on Friday, everything, when I tried to pray and when I went to church and Sunday school, I just had an uneasy feeling. And I couldn't put words to that feeling. But somehow, it didn't feel entirely real. And I wanted it to be real. I really did. I did want to. I wanted church and Sunday school and everything to mean something. And I had no one to help me. At that time, there were very, very few churches like this which were based on the Bible, built on the Bible. And the church my parents took me to was just like all the other churches. Bible was a nice book to have around. We preached a sermon on it every Sunday. I sat there in the pew, Sunday after Sunday, with my parents. And I listened to what was, in effect, a learned lecture. And I sat there in the pew, hungry, even starving even. Well, when I was 12, I started reading the Bible every day. I had a little card that told me what to read. And I started reading the Bible every day. And that did sort of help. It helped quite a lot. But the more I got to know about this God, the more I felt that there was still something missing in me. There's still, and again, I couldn't put words to it at the time, and I think now I'd say there was no connection between me and God. I read about him, I believed about him. There was no connection. I wanted some way to be connected with this God. And I just struggled on for quite a while like that. And then one day, my mother told me a story about what had happened when she was a teenager. She'd gone on holiday to a farm in the Yorkshire Dales, bigish house with full of her cousins. And it was a lovely holiday. And she, after a day or two, sort of suddenly realized that every morning before people were awake and around, she heard the front door opening and shutting and some steps going down the path. So she thought, how come? And so the next morning she looked out, and it was her favorite cousin's older brother. Now, he was probably a young man in mid-20s by then. Very much loved and respected young man. And she thought, what on this earth is he going out for every morning like that? And coming back while everybody's still asleep. So the next morning she followed him. And she followed without him realizing. He never did realize. She just followed to see what he did. And then she, I don't know if she turned a corner or something anyway, in sight, and he'd stopped. And he was leaning over a farm gate and reading his Bible. And when my mother told me that, I thought, that's it. He connected with God. He felt safe with God, like I want to feel. Okay, that's what I must do. Well, I had to wait a bit. When I was 15, the Second World War was over. We were able to have holidays again, which we hadn't had for a long time. We went on holiday to a lovely spot in the Scottish countryside. And I told my parents, in case they were worried what I was doing, but I went out early in the morning to read my Bible. And I had no difficulty finding a farm gate, but I hadn't allowed for a biting cold wind that was blowing. There was no way I could lean over it and read my Bible. So I huddled behind a stone wall and read my Bible. And I don't know how many days this went on or whether it happened the first day, but I came to the verse that said, Jesus said, whoever comes to me, I will never drive away. And you know, I took that verse and I more or less shook it in God's face. I said, Lord, you've got to accept me. You've got to have me. Jesus said he wouldn't turn anybody away. You can't turn me away. You mustn't. I've got to have you. You've got to have me. Take me, Lord. You've got to have me. Jesus said it. And I don't know. I only know that from that time on, I knew that I was connected with God. I knew I belonged to God, and I never had another worry about it.
Thank you. Can you just tell us briefly, too, how that Bible continued to speak to you? So how did the Bible shape your life in terms of vocation? And I know that that's tied up with John's story as well, so feel free to speak on his behalf. I'm sure it won't be the first time you've done that. Just tell us how the Bible shaped the rest of your life.
Do you realize how long I've lived since then? Right back from when I went to my parents' church, I'd heard about missionaries. They went abroad to tell people about Jesus, and I learned that it was a good thing. Then I gradually began to feel, after I connected with God, began to feel it might be a good thing. But it wasn't really till I went to university. The Christian Union at the university had a little room up in the roof of a building, a room nobody wanted. We had a bookcase there, and I read and read the stories of the early pioneer missionaries who went to China, Burma, India, all sorts of places in Africa. And I just thought, I would love to do that. That's what I really want to do. But I had one big problem. And that was, I wasn't at all sure that I was called to be a missionary. Now that was just a technical way used often in those days. And it simply meant I wasn't sure that God wanted it. And I thought maybe it was only me wanting it very much. And it wouldn't do. It would never work if it was only me who wanted it. And so I was very troubled about this issue of a call. Well, one day I was standing with a little group, maybe about five or six of the CU exec outside the main medical building after lectures were over, and we were talking, and I gave vent to my usual little wail that I'd love to be a missionary, but I haven't got a call. And one of the medics said, "What are you worrying about, Kath? Didn't Jesus say, go into all the world and preach the gospel to everybody?" And it was such a relief. I felt as if a great big burden had been lifted off me. I thought, that's it. If Jesus said to do it, you do it. If he said not to do it, you don't do it. Sorted out all my problem on the spot. And I had another help then at that point. The church I was going to by then really was built on the Bible. And the minister in one sermon said, "Even the best sea captain can't steer a ship that's riding at anchor." So I thought, well, that means you've got to move. You've got to move forward. And so I went back to the Lord and I said, "Lord, I'm going to change how I tackle this. I'm going to go ahead on track to be a missionary. And if you don't want me to go, you can stop me." Well, he never did. And he led me, he's more than not stopping me. He, from time to time, he gave me little nudges in a certain direction. Wouldn't say it was more than little nudges, but that's what he did. He gave me little nudges in a certain direction. One day I was standing recollected as a sort of wide street corner near the university where the CU was holding an open air meeting. And some of the men were taking turns standing on a box in the middle and speaking. And the other men and us women, we were standing around being a crowd so that other people would feel quite happy to join on. And not feel conspicuous. And I ended up standing beside an African man. I didn't recognize him, but obviously, though he was a Christian, he was holding the Bible. So I started talking to him, and I said, "Where do you come from?" And he said, "Nigeria." And I said, "Well, if you're a Nigerian, why are you standing there holding a Bible in English?" And he said, "Because I haven't got a Bible in my language." And that was quite shattering to me. And from that point on, helped by other little hints on the way, I thought, what I want to do with my life is do something for those folk who don't have a Bible in their language. And of course, 2 or 3 years later, I met John. And found that he was already training for exactly that. It seemed very convenient to go together. And we did. We had a preliminary training year, as it were, in Brazil. We were in Ghana, where we were living in a Ghanaian village for off and on for some years. But after that, we were sent on all sorts of different things to help other people translate the Bible. But having known what that Bible had done for me, we were able to spend our whole working lives helping other people to get it.
Thank you, Kath. Just finally, all of what you've described, that reading the Bible down behind the stone wall and working for Wycliffe Bible translators and so on, was all some time ago. Now that you are of more mature years, is this old book still relevant to you now? In other words, does this old book, the Bible, still speak to you?
To make the situation quite clear, I'm now 80. And to answer the question, the Bible is still fresh to me as ever it was. I think partly it's God's word, and therefore that means God is speaking. And if you come to the Bible expecting and trusting that God will speak to you, he does, and God is never dull. It's fresh. But also I do read Bible study notes, because I think it's always a help if it's a particularly familiar passage, maybe it's, even if it's new, you need some help. But whatever passage you're reading, you can be sure that some other people have got some really valuable insights into that passage that you've never had. And maybe it'll remind you of, you know, something you've seen it in the past and you've forgotten. Maybe it would be an application of it that you'd never thought of. But it's always worth getting other people's insights, whether it's in a sermon or a book or Bible study notes or whatever. Other people have such insights into God's word. But of course, there is something much more important that the Bible does mean to me now. Because, I mean, we all go through our lives aware that we're going to die someday. And death is an awful thing, and when it comes close to us, it's grief and distress. And when life is normal, we live life without thinking too much about it, that one day we'll die. That's quite normal. Nothing wrong with that in principle. But when you get to 80, you're bound to realize that within a reasonably short length of time, you are going to die. And there the Bible has been just a tremendous help to me. And the odd thing is that the Bible has far more to say about what happens at the end, what will happen at the end of the world, than what happens when you actually breathe your last and go. And what happens when you breathe your last and go is important. I'll come back to it. But it's really when Jesus comes back in all his glory, we're all going to have to stand there and he'll make an assessment of our lives. We'll just have to stand there and listen to his life assessment of us. And at that point, it's too late to say, Lord, do you think we could rerun that bit? I'd do it different this time. We can't say, Lord, could you just forget that one weekend, that one problem time? We can't do it. Not anymore. But we have the chance to do it before we die, which is where it's relevant to me right now, thinking that it will be coming. And with John, knowing that John will die. And I don't know which is worse to contemplate. But anyway, the Bible is very clear. And It is an enormous comfort to me. What Jesus said when he was dying. He was killed in a very cruel way by the Romans. With a criminal on each side of him, they were nailed to wooden posts and bars. And the accusation against them was written up above them, put above their heads. And the accusation against Jesus was the King of the Jews. And of course, for the Romans, that was insurrection. That was utterly inciting people against Rome. That was terrible. But it also happened to be true that he was the King of the Jews. And the two criminals on each side of him were taunting him, scorning him, insulting him, yelling at him. Do something about this if you're a king, huh? That kind of thing. And Jesus didn't say anything. And one of those criminals was thinking, some king. Well, as the hours ticked by, might be a king. If he isn't a king now, maybe he will be. Something like that must have gone through his mind, because that criminal, who'd been taunting him and saying who knows what all, I don't suppose he was restrained about his language. He said, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And he meant it. And that time Jesus did answer. And he said, today you will be with me in paradise. So now, I know, anybody who follows him knows that when we draw our last breath and go, we're going to be in his presence. Within his glorious presence forever and ever. It's just an unimaginable joy that's set before us.
Kath, round of applause for Kath.
Just to say that if you have got any questions, you want to... just say that if you do have any questions that you want to throw at me, feel free to, afterwards, probably rather than do that in one big group, do...